now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation that is feeling the departure of a great and much beloved American. And it's been amazing to me to watch the way that people who didn't know him at all have reacted as if they were actually losing a close friend to the news of the death of Joe Lieberman yesterday. And we'll be speaking with one of Joe's closest friends and also an old friend of mine, Lanny Davis, who actually was working for Bill Clinton at the time that Joe Lieberman, as a courageous Democrat, but a moderate Democrat who believed there were higher things than politics, risked his entire political career to chastise Bill Clinton about what happened and ultimately caused his impeachment by the House of Representatives. Of course, you know the rest of it, that Bill Clinton was not voted removed from office by the Senate. The impeachment failed, as they often do and were designed to do. Our founders wanted impeachments to be very difficult. We'll be speaking with Lanny Davis about what it was about Joe Lieberman that gave him the courage to abandon his Democratic Party and to campaign across the country with John McCain, who was running against Barack Obama as the Republican nominee. I actually participated in a political event for John McCain together with Joe Lieberman in Cleveland, Ohio, which was a while ago. Meanwhile, one of the things that was remarkable about Senator Lieberman was his focus on American security. There is a column that can scare the heck out of you, but it's very important. It's called America at Risk. It's by Daniel Henninger in today's Wall Street Journal. And the pull quote, Biden and Trump both know the details of the threat. Does either one have a plan? And what he's talking about is the kind of threat that Russia saw promulgated against it. The threat of Islamo-Nazi terrorism hasn't gone away. It hasn't disappeared. It's taken different focuses, but it is still there and still very much something that the United States needs to address. We will be discussing that with Ambassador John Bolton, who has been warning about the dangers of international terrorism for a long time, former UN ambassador, former national security advisor to President Trump. He will be joining us and about the way that Joe Biden right now is tremendously mishandling the ongoing war in Gaza. And then speaking about an ongoing war, the battle over Donald J. Trump's ongoing battle against the legal system. He has at least four trials coming up. We'll be speaking with Professor John Yu, who is a leading conservative legal scholar, professor at the University of California at Berkeley. We'll be speaking to him about what is likely to happen or to come across as a result of these various trials and accusations and what people call lawfare against President Trump. By the way, what's fascinating about that is every once in a while you have some of the comedy shows on TV that call something to the attention of the public that the other, quote, serious news shows haven't done. And that was true on The Daily Show, actually, where They found some old tape from January 7th, the day after the riots at the Capitol building. And there were responsible voices, including the voice of the President of the United States, the day after the January 6th riot, what Democrats call the insurrection. The President of the United States, Donald Trump at the time, said that there must be consequences for the rioters and what they had done. This is what he said to the nation.
You may remember, back when January 6th happened, there wasn't much of a question about this at all. Everyone who was not wearing horns agreed. The people who did this had to be punished for it. Even the guy who they were wearing the horns for agreed that there had to be consequences for their violent actions.
Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem. America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
You hear that, people who broke the law? You're gonna pay for that. So says the person who told you to break the law. No one has reversed his position on the Trump mob as hard as Donald Trump himself. He went from demanding that these criminals go to prison to promising that he's gonna get these heroes out of prison.
Trump called those now serving prison sentences hostages and patriots.
You see the spirit from the hostages, and that's what they are, as hostages.
Suggesting he'd pardon them as soon as he gets back into office.
The first day we get into office, we're going to work with the people to treat those unbelievable patriots, and they were unbelievable patriots and are. Release the J6 hostages, Joe. Release him, Joe. You can do it real easy, Joe.
Really? You can do it real easy, Joe. He's talking not about Lieberman. He's talking about Biden, of course. But what is it that made the people who perpetrated the riots, including the geophysicist who just got sentenced to 5 years in prison because he dragged a police officer down the steps, and that dragged him to the other rioters, who then proceeded to severely beat him. And I mean, honest to goodness, the idea that these people are heroes and unbelievable patriots. And there was a question that Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, who's worked for so many years with me on this show, this is a great question. And it's one I never thought of. And the question is, okay, President Trump obviously sincerely believes he won the election. He didn't lose the election, that the election was stolen. The question is then, why did he leave? Why did he vacate the White House? In other words, if he was so convinced that he had actually won, which, by the way, he did not. And the idea that somehow the more the evidence piles up that the election actually was legitimate and it was fair and it was a 7 million vote margin, a 7 million vote margin as opposed to the 3 million vote margin that Hillary Clinton won with in the first election. But she recognized that she lost. And the whole question that this is a legitimate election issue. By the way, it's interesting. Joe Lieberman lost a contested election. He was the vice presidential nominee when Al Gore was nominated. And somehow they managed to get that one settled without attacking the Capitol building and defiling the seat of power, which sounds like a bathroom accident that President Trump was talking about. We will be right back on the Medved Show. We'll be right back. And on the Michael Medved show, one of the things that is extraordinarily important is that we have real dangers in this country, and the dangers of international terrorism. And yes, Hamas, that seems to have the sympathy and support of a lot of very active members of the Democratic Party who are willing to disrupt anything, including speeches by the President of the United States, the presidents of universities, senators, congressmen, anything, to chant, what about the 30,000 in Gaza? What about from the river to the sea? All of Palestine must be free. And the extremism here, which basically asks us all to forget some of the lessons of 9/11. This is highlighted very effectively by Daniel Henninger today in his column. We'll post it at our website at michaelmedved.com, America at Risk. And he asks in the column, it seems reasonable to ask, will the U.S. wait for another 9/11 attack before doing what is necessary to avoid or deter it? The unhappy answer is that because U.S. politics has turned inward and memories are short, America likely will be unprepared for another internal catastrophe. Can anyone seriously say we are prepared for today's challenges, which include everything noted in that 9/11 Commission warning? We are in a Cold War with four traditional nation states, China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. Simultaneously, the world, which alas includes the U.S. mainland, is beset almost weekly by challenges that surpass the boundaries of traditional nation states. Islamic State is on the move again after regrouping in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. And the Islamic State claimed credit for killing more than 130 people in Moscow at a concert, for God's sake, where they burned down the concert hall that seats 9,000 people. Hamas, which like ISIS, writes Daniel Henninger, adopted the tactic of posting its bloodthirsty attacks for view on the internet, may yet succeed as the sitting U.S. president hands bends beneath pressure from anti-Israel voters in the Democratic Party. Israel this week canceled a visit to Washington after the U.S. failed to block a ceasefire resolution in the United Nations Security Council. Since November, Yemen's Houthi tribe has fired drones and missiles supplied by Iran at U.S. naval vessels and commercial ships in the Red Sea, disrupting global trade. Closer to home, writes Henninger, the U.S. government reports that members of the Venezuelan gang, Tren de Aragua, are coming into the country across the southern border. One might argue that the border is polling high in national concerns, not because of the migrant flow, but because of U.S. overdose deaths from fentanyl made by Mexican cartels, which are amassing millions to buy weapons and political protection. FBI Director Christopher Wray warns repeatedly of the extra military threat from China. On Monday, the U.S. government publicly accused China of using its hacker army to install malware in our civilian infrastructure and defense systems. Okay, the idea that this is a real problem, today, president, that's the president of Russia, recently reelected in a squeaker where his opponents held him to 87% of the Russian voters, at least according to the way the Kremlin reported the voting results. Russian President Vladimir Putin dismissed the idea that Russia could ever attack NATO. But he warned that any F-16 fighters given to Ukraine by its Western allies would be legitimate targets for Russian forces. Speaking to Air Force pilots yesterday, Putin said U.S. spending on defense exceeded Russia's and said, "Are we having this ratio? Going to fight with NATO or what?" Well, this is just nonsense. Asked about the delivery of F-16 jet fighters, which a number of European countries have pledged to deliver to Ukraine, Putin said such combat aircraft would not change the war. In other news, Ukraine's intelligence chief claimed on yesterday that Russia was aware that a terrorist attack was being planned since at least February 15th. So why didn't they do anything about it? I mean, one of the theories, and we'll talk to John Bolton about this when he joins us on the show, one of the theories is that Russia wanted this attack to happen and wanted to have something to blame on the Ukrainians, even though they, of course, had nothing to do with it. Nothing at all. One of the big items of news today politically is that Chris Christie yesterday announced that he was not going to consider running for president on a no-labels ticket. It's very sad that Joe Lieberman had been one of the founding members of No Labels. And if there was anyone who was going to be rescuing them from that embarrassing situation they're in right now, the embarrassing situation right now is that there are more people, including me, by the way, who really don't want No Labels to field a ticket here, because it would have no chance of winning. It would only have chances of damaging the electoral process. And the way that this election is shaping up, there's enough potential damage from the Robert Kennedy campaign getting a lot of people either to stay home or to waste their votes one way or another on Robert Kennedy. The No Labels group has struggled. They are writing in AOL.com. The No Labels group has struggled to put forward a ticket challenging both former President Trump and President Biden in the 2024 election. The group contacted Chris Christie about a potential run after he appeared to leave the door open to a third-party run in a public interview. "I appreciate the encouragement I've gotten to pursue a third-party candidacy. I believe we need a country that once again feels like everyone has a stake in what we're doing and leadership that strives to bring people together. But this is not the time." And there's another reason he gives. He did not want to help President Trump retake the White House. So what about No Labels and the Joe Lieberman legacy? We'll be talking to Lanny Davis coming up on the Michael Medved Show.
I'm, of course, deeply honored to receive the...
And on the Michael Medved Show, people are very well aware in the midst of this presidential campaign that about 70% of Americans, and it's Republicans as well as Democrats, wish there were some other candidate for president right now other than Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And I think one of the reasons that's one of the reasons that the death yesterday, the very sad news that Senator Joe Lieberman passed away, hit people so very hard. One of the best written reactions to that death is from one of Joe Lieberman's closest friends and also a very close friend of mine for going on 60 years, which is just unbelievable to even imagine. Lanny Davis, who was an aide to President Clinton, has been involved in Connecticut politics, and who worked on Joe Lieberman's very first campaign, where he was running for state senate in New Haven, Connecticut. And Lanny, what was it about Joe Lieberman that made him so special and so deeply able to connect with people, even in his state senatorial district in the state of Connecticut, and then later in the nation at large?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Michael. And I really could answer that same question as to what makes Michael Medved so special, because you and I have had philosophical disagreements for many years, and some of them very strong. And yet we can be friends and we can disagree agreeably, or civil disagreement, whatever the expression that you and I are able to maintain our friendship. And I won't even date us, Michael, but it's more than 50 years, that's for sure. So it's the same quality that you have that I'd like to think I have. Joe Lieberman was one of my best friends, like my soulmate. And since the first day that I met him, when I was a freshman and he was a senior in Yale College, and he helped me, directed and managed me to succeed him 3 years later as chairman of the Yale Daily News, and then through Yale Law School, and then raising babies together, and then working with you in his first campaign together, we were like soulmates. And
well,
I cried.
You mentioned in your piece that Senator Lieberman was the godfather for your son Seth,
who we're seeing right now for the 316. You'll see him on TV, and he just posted on his very well populated Twitter and Threads sites my piece about Joe, because he was Joe's godson because of my cowardice, since I refused to have the circumcision ceremony while people drank wine and a relatively drunken rabbi with a razor blade was going to do his work, and I refused to participate. And my mother insisted, and Joe said, "I'll do it, you coward, I'll do it. I have to be this little bit." And of course, years and years later, Joe Lieberman won a United Independent, and my son Seth and I came in to celebrate in this big headquarters celebration. Lieberman held his hands out and quieted everybody down of his victory, and said, "Godson has just arrived." And Seth kissed the godfather's ring, and it's one of the many memories I have of Joe and my closeness like family, and my grief that we've lost such a great man.
Well, part of what happened with Joe Lieberman is, in a country that is so bitterly divided by partisan politics, because of his friendship with one of his other closest friends, Joe Lieberman was dear friends and colleagues in the Senate for years with John McCain. And when John McCain ran for president in 2008 against another U.S. Senator, Barack Obama, Joe Lieberman did the unthinkable. He went over to the other side. He attended the Republican convention. I did a campaign event with Joe Lieberman in Ohio for McCain.
My gosh.
People who don't know politics, that was such a big and courageous deal. Because you knew Joe so well, what led him to risk his entire status in the Democratic Party? Because after that race, after that, quote, defection, he lost a Democratic primary for his Senate seat, but then kept running, ran as an independent, and won anyway.
Well, begin with the, and then personal. The principle that there were U.S. interests at stake in the Iraq Saddam Hussein danger, and he and John McCain and Lindsey Graham, the three amigos they were called, were strongly in favor of taking revenge. And that's with the Democratic Party and its usual war, anti-war divisions from the 60s. And that was the beginning of his commitment and support for John McCain.
And then you were saying that that was the principle, but there was also a personal aspect to it.
Yes. John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Joe Lieberman, and one other person became very close friends in the U.S. Senate. And the fourth person, maybe I'm revealing a secret now that she wouldn't want me to, I do all the time. Sorry. Hillary Rodham Clinton became close friends with John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And, of course, Joe Lieberman, back to the days when he was running for the state Senate, and Hillary Rodham and Bill Clinton were helping him along with Michael Medved. So it all goes back to personal and friendship can overcome differences of opinion. Indeed, that's what's missing today, is we don't have in the vile, vitriolic, hateful, what other adjectives can I use about Donald Trump's rhetoric and his politics of personal demonization? I can't say enough bad about the difference in his type of politics and the type of politics that can allow you and me to be close friends and disagree. Indeed, John McCain and Joe Lieberman. One was a conservative. Joe Lieberman was a liberal on every social issue, gay rights, civil rights, social spending, everything that's liberal. Joe Lieberman was a liberal Democrat. He just was a strong national defense foreign policy supporter, and that's what brought him together with McCain and others in the Republican Party.
Well, the other thing about apparently when McCain and Hillary Clinton, who were friends, part of that went back to a time they traveled to Russia together on a senatorial trip, and apparently they were doing a vodka consumption contest. That at least is according to some usually reliable sources. Is it not possible to imagine that kind of drinking together and celebrating together someday between President Biden and President Trump?
Never.
No. I think it's a long shot. Lanny Davis, his piece, it's entitled simply My Friend Joe, is a remarkable piece about somebody who never made it to the top prize. He ran for the presidency in 2004 after being nominated for vice president. And he joked about this. He said he never built up the Joe-mentum that he had been hoping to inspire. Lanny, thanks for inspiring us all with your piece. And Godspeed to you and your family. We'll be right back on the Medved Show.
This is Joe Mentum.
And on the Michael Medved Show, in honor of the passing of Senator Lieberman, which was sudden and very sad. The reports are that he had a fall in his home, and then he was rushed to the hospital in northern Manhattan. His home is in the Bronx, in the Riverdale section. And in any event, he all his life was a great supporter of the American military and an advocate for national security. And going back, in fact, to the days of Senator Scoop Jackson, who was a Democrat, another Democrat who was proud to be the biggest advocate for American preparedness and dealing with the dangerous world out there. Just to conclude what Daniel Henninger wrote today in the Wall Street Journal, and he obviously wrote this column before the news about Joe Lieberman became known, but he writes, amid this global chaos, the U.S. political system has thrown up, I think that's the right word, a 2024 presidential election pitting the hesitant, hobbled Joe Biden against an indeterminate, variable Donald Trump. The Security Council's ceasefire resolution, with its Biden-ordered abstention, didn't demand that Hamas release its hostages, including U.S. citizens. Five of them, by the way. At the same time, Trump allies in Congress are holding up passage of military aid for Ukraine. In both instances, the message of irresolution to our enemies puts us at risk. From the Middle East to Eastern Europe to the southern U.S. border, the world is filling with little green men, that's in quotes, proxies affiliated with the four nation states committed to winning a cold war against the nation's democracies. Those four, of course, are Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. Two countries on that battlefield, Israel and Ukraine, are fighting and dying for the rest of us. It's hard to blame those in the U.S. electorate who say they don't want to hear it, that we have problems at home, we're tired of endless wars. If only they were tired of endless wars. They're just getting started. Our military recruitment is dangerously down. Theirs is dangerously up. All roads lead back to the U.S. presidential race, writes Henninger. Mr. Biden is running around the country raising money, and Mr. Trump is sitting in courtrooms spending it. Joe Biden is president. Donald Trump was. Both know the details of the current threat. America's voters deserve to know what each is going to do about it. And I think that is an important point. And President Trump and President Biden are serious about winning, national security has to be a major issue. And one of the issues being your willingness to actually confront some of the needs for a greater investment and more a decisive posture in the world at large. And right now, again, it's tough to say it because the campaign is so compelling and the whole idea of a president and a presidential candidate being forced to spend his time in courtrooms dealing with charges against him, some would seem almost frivolous, but they're not quite. But the fact that the first trial he's facing is about the paying of $130,000 in hush money to a porn star who was asked to cover up her relationship. But that's a different story. The New York Times is reporting that for months, Donald Trump's lawyers have approached his legal cases with performative aggression and a pugilistic style, peppering judges with mountains of motions, many of them filled with far-fetched claims. And the former president himself has often been a disruptive presence at the courthouse and on social media, going after witnesses, prosecutors, and even the relatives of judges. Justice Juan Merchan, who is overseeing Trump's upcoming hush money trial in Manhattan, made it clear this week that he's having none of it. After firing a few warning shots across the Trump team's bow, Merchan imposed a gag order on the former president this week, barring him from attacking any witnesses, jurors, or prosecutors serving on the case. Under the order, Trump cannot make or direct others to make statements about witnesses' roles in the case. He is also barred from commenting on prosecutors, court staff, and their relatives if he intends to interfere with their work on the case or about the jurors in his case. One of the big issues that has been brought up by the Trump campaign has to do with an image that had been posted on the internet, and it was posted under the heading of the daughter of the presiding judge, of Judge Mershon. And it was an image that had taken a picture of Trump and put it behind bars. So he was using that as an example of how biased this trial proceeding could be, because this was something that the presiding judge's daughter had done. The only problem is she had canceled her account on social media several years before this ever appeared. And she denies she had anything to do with it. In other words, somebody had taken her former account, revived it somehow, and put this this image there involving Trump behind bars. And this is not to say it obviously would be an inappropriate thing if someone so close to the presiding judge were prejudging the situation. Meanwhile, this is what we're worrying about at a time when America is facing real and dire risks. The illustration that they use in the Wall Street Journal for this important Daniel Henninger column about America at risk shows the black smoke coming off of the stricken Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001, and with a photograph taken just moments before those two towers fell. What is astonishing, and it's something worth thinking about, is that one of the reasons that I think you see that younger people, younger voters, are so much less concerned or involved with foreign struggles. For instance, in the war on Gaza, almost all the people who are chanting and marching and carrying Palestinian flags, carrying Hamas flags in honor of the Hamas terrorists, that many of those people are simply too young to have any direct recollection of what it felt like on September 11th. And again, there are many people here who are too distant, and distant because it's 10,000 miles away, to recognize the impact of not September 11th, but of October 7th. And by the way, there's another day that also belongs in that trinity of dark days. October 7th of 2023, September 11th of 2001, and December 7th of 1941. And this goes to this question, and there's a column I've just done that's coming up, is people are asked to judge about whether the reasons for fighting were valid for Israel or for Hamas. With some surprising survey results. This is from Pew Research Service. We will get to that and to much more with Ambassador John Bolton coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.